was a 6-year-old kid growing up in East St. Louis when he opened his first bank account. It was with a credit union, and it set him on a lifelong path of saving.
I had a piggy bank that was busting at the seams, so to speak, and they said we need to go and open you a savings account. Was blessed to have parents who already were in mainstream banking.
But too many people in places like East St. Louis aren't being reached by banks. And that's something that Alex Fenoy, as an adult, is working to change. He works for Midwest Bank Center in St. Louis, and the American Bankers Association recently honored him with its George Bailey Distinguished Service Award for those efforts. I'm Sarah Fenske. This is St. Louis on the Air. Alex Fenoy, welcome.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Good afternoon to you.
So first off, congratulations on this award. This is a big deal. Did you know you were even up for this?
So I did know that there's an application that you have to put in. I gave our internal team some information, and then they put the application in. And this is months prior. And kind of how I'm set, I thought, I'll put it in. I know the work that we've done, but I'm humble. And so I honestly didn't think about it again. And 4 or 5 months later, they reach out to my boss, which is phenomenal, to Orvin Kimbrough. And he calls me and says he has some fantastic news. And he tells me, it was just a great day. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew, but then it was deep in the recesses of my mind for 5-6 months.
Yeah,
I didn't think about it again.
You know, sometimes you get nominated for something and you keep thinking, oh, I wonder if I got it. I wonder if I got it. It sounds like you were able to emotionally just move right on. And this was almost felt like a surprise then when you got it.
It really was. That's a great depiction of how it happened. I don't think of it as just myself. It's a lot of people that have at the bank, from the Stubbs to the our legal board to the rest of my cohorts on our executive team, and every person at Midwest Bank Center, and every partner that we've worked with, I've been working with for almost 11 years. I don't look at it as Alex's award. I look at it as all of ours.
Well, I want to talk about that work at Midwest Bank Center in just a moment. But first, I want to go back to your childhood. You were in East St. Louis. What first brought you to a credit union?
My parents are retired educators. So there was a teacher's credit union, which is now, I believe, Vantage, through iterations. So that's where they had their accounts. And I had a piggy bank that was busting at the seams, so to speak. And they said, we need to go and open you a savings account. And it kind of went from there. So that's a blessing in and of itself. And a lot of times in an urban environment, like in East St. Louis, not everybody was blessed to have parents who already were in mainstream banking. And they just said, we're going to go do this. And there was no fight. Of course.
And did you have something in mind at that point, like, oh, I'm going to be saving up for college, or was this just hey, let's get this money somewhere safe?
No, I always had in me, even before the account, that it was something about saving, even if it wasn't saving for anything. So just an example of that, I can remember even before the account, so 4 or 5 years old. If my grandmother or my parents or an aunt or uncle gave me a quarter, so I'm making myself feel like an old man here. I'm 52. A quarter actually meant something then.
So it's pre-inflation.
Yes. I would take the quarter and think about, I'm going to spend maybe a nickel and I'm going to save 20 cents. I'm 4 years old. I didn't want to spend all of my money. And even though I had no concept of saving for this, that, or the other. So I just think that was innately in me.
You were born to be a banker. When did you realize that this was savings was actually going to be your career?
Later in college, because you transition. I thought I was going to be a dentist from about I had a lot of deep thoughts at 5 or 6, I guess. So again, around the same age, the first time I went to a dentist, I asked I think my mother took me. It was my mother, and I asked her, what is his name? And my question was really, what's this name of this profession? And she knew that it wasn't his name, so she said he's a dentist. And I said, I want to be a dentist. So from then through probably going into my junior year of college, I was on the path to be a dentist. And where it changed is I was also taking business courses and accounting courses because at this point I knew that you ran your own business if you're a dentist, so I needed to have that. But I had much more of a passion for the business courses and the accounting courses. So I changed my major, and as they say, the rest is history.
So I understand it's only in the last 11 years that you've been working on these community development initiatives. What was your focus in your career before that?
The way I like to say it is I've had a kind of a Twin City career in banking. The first, I get my math straight here, 17 years was really commercial lending. All levels from your large corporate, middle market, to business banking. I've done all of that either myself or managed teams of commercial lenders, all throughout the St. Louis region. The last 11, the commercial lending is still a big part of what we do in CED, but it's expanded to all of the different banking lines and units within the bank, and then trying to make sure that particularly Midwest Bank Center is the same great bank in Chesterfield as we are in North City or East St. Louis.
I understand when you first came to Midwest Bank Center, you were one of just two Black employees. What was that like?
Sad to say that it was the norm.
You were used to that in banking in general, you mean?
Yes, and everywhere, especially on the commercial side of the house. Very few ethnically diverse commercial lenders, really, at any bank. I won't say the whole country because I don't know about the whole country, but in St. Louis. So
And why
I
do you
was
think
used to that.
that is? That seems like something where, it just feels like diversity should come naturally to that field.
No, it won't, because you typically interview and reach into your networks, and if your networks are only like you, so for instance, if you're a white man and most of your network is other white men, you're going to know and your connections, their sons, their cousins, people that work at their company are going to look exactly like you. So you have to make the change, and then you will start to get diversity. And it's not just diversity, it's inclusion and equity. So it can't just be, at the lowest levels. Everybody's job is important. So I don't mean low from not being important, but low from not being a supervisor or a manager or an executive. It doesn't work if everybody at the lower spectrum is diverse, but none of the other layers. So
Do you think that?
that
Sorry.
hasn't changed today. It's changed at some places, but it's still prevalent in 2021.
Has that changed at your employer at Midwest Bank Center?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have gone from even in the beginning, because most of our original ethnic, or I'll just go straight to it, Black employees we had, I brought in, so I knew everybody. Well, today, I haven't brought in every Black person at the bank is not a direct link to Alex Fanoy, and that's been for several years, and so we're absolutely living. What we talk about. So it's an example with our executive team. Our executive team is 70% minority, and that's three African American men and four Caucasian women, which is unheard of. I don't know any other financial institution in the market that's anywhere close to that.
Hmm.
And then all the way through our organization, through the bank, our ethnic diversity exceeds the demographics of the population in the St. Louis region.
So, yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the diversity among bankers, but there's also a real issue here of there being so many people who are unbanked within the St. Louis area. These are people who don't have even the most basic access to these kind of services. Do you think the lack of diversity among people working in banking has played a role in the fact that so many people in the community don't feel a connection or don't know how to get started on a bank account?
Sarah, that's a great point, and I do agree with it. It's not the single. It's a multifaceted problem, but that is one of the problems that has historically been in the way. Some of the others is a lack of trust. Some of the others is just not convenient because we're not in, as an industry, typically we're not located in those communities. So there's a lack of access there. Another component to it is because we don't have the trust, not there, you don't know the products and services that you need to bring those individuals in. Now, one thing I will say, St. Louis collectively since 2009 has made tremendous progress in that front, not just Midwest Bank Center, a lot of fellow financial institutions in making progress in that point, but all of it were problems. And I'll say a final one is in a lot of the communities where there's heavy, heavy unbanked and underbanked, which is not only in LMI areas, it's across all economic lines, but it's more prevalent in LMI areas. There's easy access to predatory options. So what I mean there is it may not be a bank or a credit union, but it's 7 check cashing places or things of that nature. And so it's lack of one piece, but then easy access to the other that's not the best for you.
And Alex, when you refer to LMI, that's lower middle income customers. These are the ones just...
I'm sorry. Low or moderate income. It's low, moderate, middle, upper.
Okay.
And the bottom two are the low and moderate are.
So Alex, do you think banks are aware that they're missing out on customers, that, you know, serving this community better might also be good for their own bottom line?
I'd like to think that as an industry, we are aware of that fact. But sometimes it seems like the evidence is that we aren't aware. And then it also leads me to that, you know, I'd hate to think of the other thing. If we are aware and then we're choosing not to be a part of it, then that's a little more nefarious, right?
Mm-hmm.
So but I don't want to be cynical, but I think it's more of the latter because this work is one of the sayings I live by. Yeah, it's not complicated, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, you know, we know that some of the ways that we underwrite, some of the ways that as an industry, they're biased in ways.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that. So how about let's work on how we can remove some of those biases? Not everything, because we're for profit and banks have very thin margins, so we can't have a lot of losses in any way. So I'm not a proponent of just saying yes to anything, but we have to put in the work to understand the changes that we need to make. And that's the hard part, not complicated, but hard. So I think there's decisions being made that, you know, I'm going to scratch the surface and do enough, but I'm not going to do that hard part.
We're talking today to Alex Fenoy. He's the Executive Vice President of Community and Economic Development for Midwest Bank Center in St. Louis. He's also the recipient of the George Bailey Distinguished Service Award. On the subject of sort of putting your money where your mouth is, Midwest Bank Center recently pledged to make $200 million in community and economic development loans over the next 5 years. Up to 80% of that money will be spent in the St. Louis area. Alex, can we hold your bank to this? That seems like a huge investment.
Oh, you absolutely can. You know, not only is our majority shareholder, the Stupp family, Orvin Kimbrough, our legal board, our executive team, me, and individually, all of the people at the bank, you can count on this. That is a huge commitment. And because scale matters, right? So banks always talk about themselves in the size of their assets. So we're a $2.3 billion asset bank as we're talking today. And so $200 million is you know, a little less than 10% of our entire capital.
That's huge.
So that's a huge commitment. But it's even larger when you think, and there's an international bank, I'm not going to say their name, that made a similar commitment maybe 4 months ago now to what they're going to do over a five-year period. And their number, when you compare apples to apples, is $600 million. So they're about 500 times our size, and their commitment is only three times our commitment.
Was it hard to get people within Midwest Bank Center to be on board for something this big? This must have been taking quite a lot of work.
You know, it wasn't hard. It was because we had already been on this path. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use some license here and speak for my CEO. This is a big part of his heart. And he wanted to not just double down, but triple down in the work that we had already started when he came in. It's part of the Midwest Bank Center culture in our heartbeat. It's absolutely important to the Stupps and the legal board. And then when you have the support of the CEO and chairman, and it's a part of what he wants to happen, not just for profits, which is important to us, but not just for that, but because it's the right thing to do, then it wasn't hard at all to get buy-in across the board.
So, Alex, you've been honored with this big award. This is named for George Bailey, the protagonist in It's a Wonderful Life. And he's shown in that movie what his hometown would look like without his lending. Hearing you talk today, hearing you talk about your CEO and just the good work you're doing, do you think bankers get a bad rap?
yeah, in some cases we do, especially, you know, the latest example, you know, when we went through the Great Recession, 2008, 2009, 2010, all bankers were kind of merged into Wall Street banking,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is completely unfair because probably every financial institution in St. Louis wasn't a party to any of the issues. And I'm including even your largest banks. They really weren't a part of a lot of what happened with, you know, subprime lending. Mm-hmm. That was a specific, terrible segment that, again, especially the credit unions and community banks like Midwest Bank Center, we were not in that at all,
mm-hmm.
but we all got lumped in that we created the problem off of our greed, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some of it is deserved and earned because we've known for a long time that some of the communities, I'll use my hometown, East St. Louis and North City in St. Louis as an example, fantastic people there that we have not supported. And when I say we, I mean collectively as an industry. So some of it is earned, but not all of it.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, as you drive around town, thinking about how this town would be different? We could all be living in Potterville if not for the community development efforts and efforts to get lending into the hands of the right people.
You know, it's one of my favorite movies, and it's funny that I didn't make that connection until winning the award. So my driving around town in areas that we want to support and help people live their best lives and help them to be successful. My thought is always looking at it as what it could be, but I never made the connection. And that's a movie that I probably watch, if not every year around the holiday season, 90% of the time.
And you're a banker. You never made that connection with what Jimmy Stewart does in that movie?
I did not. And especially with what I was doing, I think I was so focused on the work and the help, and then trying to be a good partner, and then trying to encourage even some of our competitors, because if, you know, I want to be the leader in this space, but I want to help the community as much as I can. So I know there's a limit. There's just a capital limit to what all we can do, at we being specifically Midwest Bank Center. So I want to lead by example and want us to lead by example and encourage others to follow and be a part of the space, because it turns the communities around faster. But no, I did. But now I see it.
Now you will not be able to watch that movie the same way again.
No, I won't.
Well, Alex Fenoy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations again on your award.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been an honor, and I appreciate all the great work that you do. Listen to you often, so it's an honor to be a part of here.
Well, thank you. That makes me happy to hear that too. Alex, again, is the Executive Vice President of Community and Economic Development for Midwest Bank Center in St. Louis. He's also the recipient of the George Bailey Distinguished Service Award. More reporting from the St. Louis On the Air team is available at stlpublicradio.org. And be sure never to miss a conversation by subscribing to our podcast. You can find St. Louis On the Air on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts on the App Store. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Evie Hempel, Lara Hamden, Emily Woodbury, and Alex Hoyer. The audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Sarah Fenske.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.